with John and congratulate him on another contest win. John, congratulations.
Good morning, Steve.
You're obviously, you're racking them up at this point.
Man, it's just been a good year. Very fortunate, sometimes I say you got to get lucky. I think that luck's starting to progress into success. It is what it is. This weekend was good. Definitely got to thank Horse Tourneys for giving us the platform to play like I always do, and all the players that play.
Let's talk about Saturday, and then we'll get some wider thoughts in. Largent ends up being the key to everything, the key price of the day in a contentious Fort Lauderdale. Talk about landing on Largent.
Basically, when I looked at the tournament, I knew they had about 144 entries, and I figured, I used to be a player that just pick winners. If I could pick six or seven, winners in going into the, if it's a 12 race field. And I just got to the point where it would be frustrating when you're trying to win a tournament and you're capping out. I'm capping everybody and hitting all the races, but you're not winning the tournament because you're getting a bomb coming in. So I kind of just changed my strategy and just started focusing on price horses that made the most sense. And in that particular race, the Fort Lauderdale, they had a few angles that I felt were interesting. The first was you had two Todd Pletcher horses in the race. Usually when that happens, I tend to go with the higher-priced horse. And in this case, it happened to be Pletcher. And I knew Cox would have factor this and Holiday with Pletcher on the lead. And if we could get a pretty good pace, it could set it up for Paco coming down the stretch with Largent. The horse was 8 for 8. In the money, had won 5 races, so it made sense to me. And that was the reason I used Largent, besides the fact that I'm kind of weird and I like stuff like Steve Largent, signs that kind of hit me.
I absolutely understand that. In fact, who was it the other day that we had was it last week or the week before we had a conversation and, one of those deciding factors, something like that just is sort of a in the back of the mind kind of a feel, 17-1. This was not an easy horse to land on, and especially when you consider a few things, John, about this field, because Channel Cat was 14-1, Shug with Breaking the Rules was 11-1. I mean, there were some other attractive prices if you were going to look away from the obvious favorites.
Yeah, you're right, and I mean, I just looked at it. I'd hit earlier in the tournament, I hit the first race, which Tri-St. Lorenzo, I like that horse, as well as Nico's Dream, the Barkley Tag horse at 8-1, and that kind of set it up. So going into that race, I knew, well, here it is, it's Christmas, baby, and I have a chance to light this leaderboard up like a Christmas tree if he hits. And the horse came through for me. And, I definitely was making some noise at my house. Probably neighbors probably were wondering what was going on, but it's all good.
Well, and that brings up an important point because, a lot of people, the distractions when you're playing from home, they can get at you. And somebody said to me, you should ask John how he's able to concentrate and be able to follow the action when he has to run to the store for the wife.
Look, I'm always having to go do chores, whether get in the garden and get dirty, take out the trash, and it's like, hold on, sweetheart, they got a race going off. I need to see what's going on here. I got to try to hit this race, but can you do the laundry? But, it is what it is, with this whole COVID world we're living in. Everybody, is in the same boat. So I it actually benefits me because I feel like I'm in my own environment at home. So it actually helps me, and I'm sitting there sending videos and messages to my group of guys, Team Hoodat, and they're sitting there telling me, like, Baychok, I don't know how many times he's trying to tell me, especially like with the Breeders' Cup and stuff, focus, like stop sending us messages.
Talk about Tri Saint Lorenzo too, because he's a horse that came up on Friday with Nick Tamaro, and this was a case of one of those horses that, you know, breaks through, breaks the maiden after a number of tries, and now is coming back, you know, in a non-winners of two. And this kind of a horse, there's tons of evidence, and there's tons of players that love going back to a breakthrough maiden winner coming right back to win again. The proverbial light bulb, you know, going on.
Yeah, I mean, I felt the same way. I mean, the main thing for me with Tri Saint Lorenzo was it was a closer, and I thought it had a chance, and I liked the price. I mean, that a lot of times in these tournaments, you got to start off. It's kind of beneficial if you hit a 7 or 8 to 1 off the gate, because then people are trying to catch you, and they're maybe taking horses they might not want to take, and it kind of forces other players out of the tournament early on.
Well, and this was really a great way to start, because you end up with a, you know, essentially a $20 winner, 1940. And I'm just looking at the leaderboard. There were quite a few people, actually. I'm just noticing Evan Tromer, who finished third. He had Tri-Saint Lorenzo. Tom Arndt, who was fifth. He had Tri-Saint. Mike Gillum, David Barnier, Sean Nolan, Steve Lombardo. This is all in the top 10, top 12. You ended up with 119.40, and you were clear from Tom Blosser by a good 17 bucks.
Yeah, and Trauma and Blossom both had, you know, the sixth horse, so they were both on that horse as well.
That's true. I'm just know. In fact, the top four finishers all had Largent. You, Tom Blosser, Evan Tromer, and Braden Selvig round out the top four. And we should tell people this was a $15,000 win Saturday.
Yeah, it was. It was a good win. I mean, we've been very fortunate this year. I've had some, you know, pretty decent scores. I attest that to the people who have, you know, took me in and taught me the game. You know, obviously my story is known that I was on the Horse Players reality show pilot, didn't make the show. And, you know, I met the Baychox and the Helmers of the world, and they, you know, taught me the game, and I was very fortunate, and it's starting to, you know, benefit coming later in life, you know, 6-7 years down the road. I've been very fortunate to meet guys like Eric Pinheiro and the Shen Barrettes and Al Ford, and obviously my brother from another mother, Dogzilla baby, and the shoe, Bobby Shoemaker does a great job. Whenever I have questions, he always answers them, and he's one of the best handicappers out there. But Dogzilla just is on a different planet. I'll put him up against anybody for you name the sport. We could be betting on ants crawling up a wall, and Dogzilla's going to win.
Of course, Dogzilla being Anthony Trezza, Dr. Trezza, and you know, absolute, virtually everybody you're mentioning, I mean, just has had protracted success, whether it's straight, you know, just horseplay in general or in the contest side. And I, John, I think it's interesting that you noted that you changed up your approach when it comes to the contest play. And this is one of the things that, you know, when we've discussed contests over the years, you know, particularly something like this, this is a pick and pray style. Being able to pick winners is obviously part of it, identifying horses that can win, but then strategically the game theory element in terms of, you know, being willing to pick the potential winner at the best price available and opening yourself up to these wins. And it's that tinkering with the approach, you know, that turns, you know, good players and good handicappers into better contest players. Because I personally have found it maddening. To me, that's been the whenever I've tried to play a contest, it that part of it makes me nuts, is being able to step away from the logical horse. I mean, a lot of times for me, a decent price will be, to me, the logical horse, but I have not been able to translate it into, you know, picking winners that you know, put together a contest win. And I think that's the hardest thing for people.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, you got to find a vulnerable favorite. And if you can find a vulnerable favorite, and for me, I just say, okay, is that favorite going to be on the lead? Okay, I'm looking for a price horse coming from the closing, and vice versa. That's kind of how I make it more simple. I come at it from a different perspective because I really wasn't a handicapper. I was more of a, you know, fantasy football type guy. And so when I came into horse racing, I think I had it from a different angle. I don't indulge myself in all the PPs and the racing form and you know all that. I just look at time forms and stuff like that to really show me the clarity of the race, and then I go through and pick it apart and go from there and look for the vulnerable favorite and look for a bomb.
When you're not playing in contests, talk about, you know, your general bankroll play and what your
preferred. Yeah, I've said this all along. I don't really bet the horse as much, to be honest. The Breeders' Cup I got into, had won in 4 days before the tournament and took my shot. You know, I actually was in ninth at one point, hit a nice double, and then I said, you know what, I might not ever have this chance again, who knows, so I'm just going to take a shot. And I went strong with a win bet, and if I'd have been right, you know, we might be the Breeders' Cup champion from this year. But, you know, everybody has similar stories, but it's no secret, you can look on the website and you can see what my plays were. And I took a pretty big shot, and I like 11 horses. It's my number, and you know, I hit a double 5/11, $600 double with Nico Go. Nick's Go and the European Bomb, the 11 right after that. And then I took my chance with Ivar. I felt Ivar had a chance to win a race. It was an 11 horse. I just hit an 11 horse, and you know, I went strong on it and took my shot.
I love it. That's pretty funny.
But honestly, I don't really bet horses daily. I mean, I'll play a pick six here and there, but for me, I look forward to the champ sending me, you know, he'll do like these pick six shares and these pick five shares. And I mean, I can't even get to the phone fast enough. I can't click the button fast enough to get the bet in on Twin Spires. I mean, hello, you know?
That's funny. And you know, because the contest format, and like looking at Saturday, for instance, Aqueduct, Tampa, Laurel, Gulfstream. So four venues. And if you're not playing every day, you aren't necessarily, you know, watching and you know, you're not necessarily plugged in to, you know, particularly, I would think, the Laurels and the Tampas. You know, you would think that the Aqueduct and Gulfstream might be more, you know, as the A tracks versus the B tracks. So in a lot of cases, when you open up those PPs on a Saturday, you know, you're acquainting yourself with, you know, with some venues that you aren't necessarily watching during the week.
Oh, of course. I mean, I'm definitely at a disadvantage in tournaments when it comes to it, to be honest. I mean, I'm focused on fantasy football and you know, Eagles covering on the Saints yesterday. I know that's your team, and
you
actually like the Eagles to cover it. To win outright was impressive. I'm really happy for you, and I got a buddy, Steve Ward from Philadelphia. You know, that's my focus. When it comes to the races, I literally, it's 5:30 in the morning on a Saturday. I'm looking at the card, and that's the first time I've seen these horses. And I have to handicap really quick because my son's getting up 7:38, you know, he's ready to play. So I got to have everything done early. And you're right, I am at a disadvantage from that standpoint. But I find that I just go through, and you got to analyze data as fast as you can, and you eliminate the horses you don't like. You look at the horses you like, see what the scratch is on, and boom, 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 you know, you put the picks in.
Yeah, and you know what? It, listening to that, it kind of feels like, you know, you can roll with, you know, with the results too. You're not going to dwell on you know, getting beat, and you know, you just I don't sense that you ever get thrown necessarily for and get you know, kind of down on your approach.
No, like, I mean, I don't at all. I mean, I'll walk you through this weekend. This weekend, I took a shot of one, you know, won my way in with the early feeder for whatever it was, 20, 50 bucks, whatever it was. And then, you know, I hurry up and handicap the card right before. And, you know, it's just eliminating the horses you don't like. Like Blink, Malcolm Gladwell book that the champ put me on. It's just making quick decisions. And I think that's what helps me is I don't overthink it. I don't overanalyze it. I go with it. I mean, the funny part is, as soon as I won the tournament, didn't even realize it, my proxy from Vegas calls me and says, hey, you didn't put your super contest picks in. And me and the team Who Dat, we in the top 100 right now for the Vegas Millions. And so I had to hurry up and give him the picks while I'm watching the horse coming down the stretch to win the tournament. So I have so many different things going on. You know, in the FFPC, which is a high-stakes fantasy football, I made the playoffs with both my teams, so I'm looking at injury reports. So it's crazy that I have that much going on, and then I'm just hurrying up and getting my picks in for the horse tournament. So I think having that much going on and being able to analyze that data as fast as possible is what helps me, because I don't overthink things.
Well, and fold you basically. It's a natural. John Hurd with us, the Hurricane. It folds into your day job, right? I mean, when it comes to data analysis.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I do. I look with equities for a living, and so for me, picking horses is a lot easier, you know. And especially with analyzing data, I mean, you got to be quick at it, and you either have it or you don't. That's what I tell people. Like, can you teach me how to do this? I can't. You either have it or you don't. It's a gift. It's hard to explain, you know. And it's like a buddy of mine. He's from Memphis, Tennessee. His name's Mark Goodfellow. He owns the biggest pre-owned car lot in Tennessee, and it's called It's All Good Auto Sales. And it's funny because the name of it is It's All Good Auto Sales. And for me, whenever I miss something or I win something, I'm always like, it's all good. So it doesn't, I don't think about it after that is my point. You know, I really don't. I just kind of move forward. If I miss a race, I go on to the next race. And that's the key. Too many people, they get frustrated because they miss a bomb or they get beat on a race and they can't go to the next race fast enough. You got to forget the past and move forward. You can't be looking in the rearview mirror.
I quickly looked up It's All Good Auto Sales, and I guess your man Mark is famous in Memphis for wacky commercials.
Yeah, he I love his saying. It's I don't care about your credit. I care about you, baby. Hello. So I mean, and that's how it is. Like you can't in life. I think, worry about themselves too much. And in life, you gotta be a people person, and you gotta care about others. So like on Twitter the other night, some guy's like, "How the heck did you have Largent? Like, how do you have that horse?" And so I took the time, you know, I gave him a realistic answer on Twitter. And, you know, I try to help people because people help me. That's how this world works, you know, whether you're a Democrat or Republican, whatever, it doesn't matter. It's about being working as Americans to move forward and get through this COVID and get through everything we're going through as a country.
Well said. And hopefully that, you know, that message can resonate, you know, looking and going back to Largent where we started the conversation. You know, it is fun to when price horses produce and they win, it is fun to go back. If you didn't have them, you know, try to figure out from what angle was it. Was it a pace scenario? Was it, you know, a horse that was developing and you know, took a logical next step, you know, as somebody that's a big, you know, big user of Thoroughgraph, you know, sheet methodology and, you know, and the patterns that the horses are, you know, seemingly, you know, moving either away or regressing or advancing. And Largent was not a horse. Straightforward. Largent was not a horse, at least from a fig standpoint, that, you know, seemed to be very competitive in here. He seemed like a marginal player. And so that's why separating him at that price at 17 to 1, and what was he on the morning line? I think he was 20 to 1. So he actually
came. He was 20 to 1.
Yeah. So he took a couple of shekels and came down a little bit, not a lot, but that's the differential is weighing, as I said to start things out. I mean, to me, breaking the rules, was going to be a square price, and so he was the horse that I was asked on Friday when we were handicapping stuff. Who did I love? And I said, well, breaking the rules, I think, is going to be a square number, and he ended up third in here. But those are the decisions that that either make a difference on or losing for the day, or in this case, winning a contest.
Yeah, and that's why. I mean, I think it was 144 entries and only 9 players had the horse, and it's a horse you had to have. Hmm. And you got to be able to, in these contests, even if you love a favorite, and let's say it's a Baffert or it's a Chad Brown on turf and it's a heavy favorite, you have to be disciplined to say, look, if this is a pick and pray, I can't use a horse. I got to find a horse that can beat it. And what's the most logical horse that can beat it at a price? Because if you have that heavy favorite, it's not going to really move the needle unless you're right there. You need to be using these price horses. That's the way you separate yourself in these contests.
Exactly. Exactly right. John Hurd with us, the Hurricane. This was just a straight cash prize contest. This was not, by the way, like an NHC qualifier, just straightforward chance to win money. And as you said, 144 entries, $90 below 15,000. How much did you pay to in the play-in in the qualifier?
Yeah, the early fee to that morning. I think it was like
18.
Yeah, it was like 20 something bucks. I think it was cheap. I mean, and that's what I'm saying, to be able to turn that into the payout that I received. I mean, it's crazy to think that, but it happens. It happens all the time on horse tourneys, and that's why I love supporting McKay and Eric Wing, because they give us the platform to play on. You know, think about that. You put in $20, and at the end of the day, boom, bada bing, $15,000. I mean, that's crazy. You can't even do that at an ATM.
Well, and whether it's cash like this, just a cash contest, or whether it's playing toward an NHC seat or any of the big contests, BCBC and some of the big.
Yeah, and that's the beauty of it, that you can qualify for these tournaments. I mean,
exactly.
I've qualified for NHC every year pretty much through that tournament site. So, and the NHC will be interesting this year. I've got to the point where I'm not going to sit there and just pick favorites like I used to and end up in, 300th place. I'm going to go for the win. I'm going to take bombs and see if I can get on the top 10 table.
Well, and you had 20, 30, and $36 winners on Saturday. And on that topic, actually, I mentioned this at the top of the show, because I said to Casey, I asked Case to look up when you joined us earlier in the year. And I thought it was June, July, but it was August. And with the NHC in Vegas in August, it's going to be a very different landscape with Saratoga, Del Mar, and Ellis as the major venues. I think it offers a really interesting wrinkle to how everybody is going to approach it. I mean, these are. This is wheelhouse time for the horse playing community.
Yeah, you're right. It really is. I think it'll help that, I'll be sitting at a table with Doczilla and the Champ and Big Ben Baychok and Al Ford and Eric Pinheiro and the Shinvarets. So I think that'll be beneficial for me, because I'm going to rely on those guys. I'm going to ask them, hey, who you like here? Who you like there? Because some of those tracks I'm not as good at. So if they have an opinion, I'm certainly going to listen to them when I'm handicapping the races, because I'm going to be handicapping them on the fly.
Well, we're still a. I just talked to Duke Matisse, and Duke hasn't qualified yet, but he hasn't played many contests. And a reminder again, January 23rd is going to be the end of the 2021 qualifiers. You got one seat right now or two?
I got one seat right now. I'm going to certainly try for another seat. It's definitely beneficial to have two seats because it's more bombs that you can use. I mean, like I remember a couple of years ago, Bobby Shoemaker, we were sitting there and he's like, anybody like anything? I got, you know, one pick left, and he was on one or two horses. And I said, man, I like this first time at Fairgrounds. And he looked at me like I was crazy. I'm like, I'm telling you, this horse can win. He's a first timer. And, the shoe looked at him. He's like, man, I actually like him. He used him 64 to one shot, boom, wired the field. And, and the shoe baby, jumped up the leaderboard. So, you know, you gotta be humble in this game, and you gotta be able to listen to your friends and see what they like too, because they might see an angle that you're not seeing. And I'm big proponent of being humble and listening to what others have to say, because there's a lot of great handicappers out there. I mean, Ben Baychak, he helps me all the time. I can't thank that guy enough. I mean, he's always positive, always saying, hey, you have it. You have that it factor. You can be one of the best. You just got to believe it yourself, and you got to be able to channel your game and adjust depending on the tournament. And that has really helped me. I mean, it really has, being able. Doc Zilla, he pushes me all the time to say, I want conviction. Give me the horse you think's going to win, or don't give me a teaser. Tell me who's going to win this game, and I think that helps me grow as a better by just being conviction and not hesitating on decisions.
You know, it's, and I got it because I got to ask this follow up too to that. Then not the table approach, but bouncing options off amongst a group. Nobody at the table is shy about sharing, you know, their ideas that way.
Well, I mean, this is the thing. People talk about collusion and all these things, you know, whatever. I get it. But it's not that we collude. What we do is we just talk about the races. So if somebody likes something and you don't see that angle,
right,
then you're going to go look at that race and say, well, what does he see that I'm not seeing in this race? And you're going to take the time to identify that horse. And if it makes sense to you, then heck yeah, I'm going to go play that horse. Although I'm my own man, I make my own decisions. And, if I'm going to bet money on a horse, or I'm going to pick a horse in a contest, nobody's putting a gun to my head to do that. I'm going to do it because that's the horse I think can win the race. And I think that goes for most players out there. And for me, I love the camaraderie that the NHC brings and the table aspect of everything. I mean, heck, we got a table bet against JK every year. We've never beaten them, so maybe this is the year we take out JK. I think sometimes I'm more focused on the champ JK bet than I am the NHC.
I love it. I know. And now that you say that, that's, I forgot that gets a lot of play when we're in Vegas.
Camaro and Eric and those guys, so they're pretty dangerous. So, you know, we're going to get them one year. I mean, they've literally beat us every year, but we're going to get them.
I absolutely concur. They'll be your turn at some point. Maybe some Magui. Get the Magui's in there. That might put you over the top.
Yeah, maybe that would be. If the Magui's would join the Team Houdat clan, I think maybe that would put us over the top, because JK, he's been on fire this year.
He's had a good, absolutely. He's had a great year, no doubt. And yeah, that included the great run at BCBC. And I'm going to have to adjust the thinking, because I said this the other day. I'm we're going to get to Christmas, and I'm already this week normally would have been in Arizona and California. And you know, then after Christmas would be gearing up, you know, to get ready, you know, for Vegas and the normal, you know, the normal winter travel schedule, which basically came to a halt in the beginning of March this year. And I suppose it might pick back up by late March. It's really been difficult. And how have you been? You know, how have you been impacted business wise? I guess they're really. I know there's been some volatility, but
the markets have been good. I mean, look, I got a laptop, and that's all I need. You know, and I call my clients and whatnot. But it, you know, that the COVID, I think, has impacted everybody, no matter what, no matter who it is, and whatever field you're in. You know, it's really hurt the economy in many aspects. But I think what I believe in is that, you know, as an American, is that, you know, we're resilient, and resiliency will come through, and we're going to get through this as a country. You know, not just me as a person, John Hurt. I mean, I'm going to get through it no matter what, because I surround myself around successful people and positive people. But I think that, you know, I feel for people like, you know, not that don't have jobs, that lost their job through all this. Sure. I get a lot of that. And, you know, it's sad, but I think that, you know, like going back to NAC, I hope that we still have a lot of people show up at NAC, because to me, there's a lot of camaraderie there, and you see a lot of, you know, great people. And, you know, hopefully we all get through this, and the NAC is the NAC of past, and, you know, everybody's there. I mean, one thing I love is you sit in a room, and then you got this 80-year-old guy yelling boom or, you know, whatever. And I'm sitting there like, man, that's great. This guy's 80 years old. He just hit a bomb, and he's going crazy. And sometimes I'm like, man, this guy's more juiced up than I am. What am I doing? I gotta hit something here, you know. So I like the being in the room in that aspect of the NHC.
John Hurt, everybody, the Hurricane, and you should be following it. It's a roller coaster ride, win or lose. Whether it's football and the team, the fantasy action, or whether it's contest play like this weekend. How has your football season gone?
It's been great. I mean, it really has been. I mean, in fantasy football, the FFPC is the highest stakes fantasy football league out there. I was actually leading it in 2012, the whole tournament, and literally lost on the last weekend $300,000 and finished, I think, eighth. But this year I got both my entries I'm excited about. They're both in the championship rounds, won my individual leagues. And so from a fantasy football standpoint, you know, doing really well this year, and hopefully, you know, a little bit of luck might be able to get into the top 50 and get in the money, as well as on the Vegas Super Contest. I mean, we're sitting in the
Amazing.
Top 100, so, you know, Dogsville is an animal of picking, so he's got us up there, and, you know, you never know. You know, we only five or six games out of the picks, out of the leader. So, I mean, overall, it's been a great year, and I think being at home helps me focus, because I have six screens in front of me, and I'm constantly, every day, you know, doing work.
John Hurt, everybody. Hurricane, well done. Congratulations. I suppose some extra Christmas goodies for the family.
Hey, look, it's going to be a good Christmas, that's for sure, man. I've been very fortunate this year, and I have a lot of people to thank for that. And, you know, it's really been good, and hopefully we can continue it through the NHC.
John, thanks so much. Great to get you back on. What a great year you've had, and hopefully it moves on and continues through 2021.
Hey, Steve, look, seriously, thank you for all you do. I'm so excited to be on your show. I appreciate it every time. You're instrumental in moving our sport forward. You're a legend of the game. You're the GOAT. And I love listening to you in the mornings. You know, you always have great interviews. And, you know, I hope I'm back. Welcome anytime, because I love
anytime.
Doing it with you. And you do a great job, man. Who that, baby? Who that?
There he is. the John, thanks so much. Very kind. Happy, healthy, and Merry Christmas.
You too, Steve.
John, buddy. he's a live wire, and That team Houdat, they've set him loose on the horse playing community. We're a little past the top of the hour. We're actually going to stay in the Bayou after the break, because Colby Hernandez is going to join us. And I wanted to get some of the backstory behind the big price, Grand Luigi, that won the Louisiana Champions Classic. Gerard Perron sent this one out, the El Corredor veteran, 53 to 1? Unbelievable. Anyway, Colby Hernandez, when we come back at the races.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania, only unlike the national trend. And this year's Live Foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
The exciting Southern California Thoroughbred Daytime Racing Circuit continues with the L.A. County Fair Meet at Los Alamitos Racecourse. The meet is off to a great start with strong fields throughout, and the stakes action continues at the Orange County Track, headed by the Los Alamitos Futurity on Saturday, December 19th. The Futurity has seen some tremendous winners in years past, like Standouts McKenzie in 2017, Improbable in 2018, and Thousand Words in 2019. Watch and wager on all the great racing action on TVG, plus all other major ADW providers, and at open satellite locations. On weekdays, our first post will be 1 p.m., while weekends will feature a 12:30 p.m. first post time. Plus, our wagering menu includes a pair of $1 pick fours, a traditional $2 pick six, and the popular 14% players pick five. And as we continue to follow our local guidelines, we'd like to thank all the great racing fans across the nation for their continued support of Los Alamitos Racecourse. Watch and wager on exciting Southern California thoroughbred racing. The L.A. County Fair Meet at Los Alamitos continues through Sunday, December 20th. For more, visit losalamitos.com.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
From Coney Island to the Sunset Strip, somebody's gonna make a happy trip tonight while the moon is bright. He's gonna have a bag of crazy toys to give the cronies of the girls and boys. So day Santa comes on day. Come a calling when the snow's the most, when all your cats are sleeping warm as toast, and you gonna flip with old Saint Nick, face a lick on a peppermint stick. Come a flying from a high place, fill the stocking by the fireplace, so you, ever you, that's
there you go. That's our. Card produced a $100 winner in the classic Grand Luigi under CJ for Gerard Perron, who bred this El Corredor five-year-old as well as trains. And Colby, welcome and congratulations.
Thank you, Steve, for having me.
It's my pleasure. This is a fun story. Tell us about this horse and what the expectations were going in.
Going into the race, I looked at it. I said, he had tactical speed. He's been running short. So I said, well, we're going to just try to lead there, send him kind of hard. And if anybody goes, try to chase him, then we'll sit right off. But the whole time, we just plan on just Put him on the lead and then try to nurse it from there.
You had to fend off. That was a terrific stretch duel too when Shang got to you, and you lost the. It just so happens that the stretch call, they had Shang on the chart. They've got Shang putting the nose in front, and here's a 52-1 shot, staying with the favorite.
Yes, my heart's dug in. Head of him, he dug in. He fought on. He wouldn't let that horse pass him.
That's just tremendous. you've got it seems a real good opportunity this this fairgrounds meet. We haven't really had a chance since Thanksgiving to talk much about the start of the season. And there's, you know, the weather was terrible the first week, and it took, if you couldn't get a grass race in, crazy. But it seems like we're getting into a nice flow. And, you know, you've got an interesting situation because you ride for the big barns that come to town, and then you've also got the relationship, you know, year round from the rest of the circuit.
Yes, sir. I have a good Louisiana business, and I have good. That's the first time I ever rode the horse, and when I walked in the paddock, and their plan was the same as I was thinking. He said, "Just break, try to put him on the lead if we can make the lead, and then just go from there." it worked.
they say the horses don't know that they're 50-1, but jockeys do. But jockeys do know, though.
I rode them. In the program, looking at the program, it didn't look like he should have been 50-something to 1.
That's fair.
He went off. He was 8-1, and then I rode him with confidence and. He ran a great race.
I love it. Pays 107. Talk about the winter and the expectations coming in.
We have some good business going on right now, and just hopefully stay healthy and keep doing well.
I like it, and got to mention, from a family perspective, it's got to be fun when Brian comes to town.
Yeah, it is.
Right, because they stay healthy this winter, and we'll see you in the winter circle. I think pretty regularly, looks like.
All right, thank you.
Colby Hernandez, CJ, and of course brother Brian, BJ Hernandez. There's a hatful of them. I think is there four brothers? There's a whole bunch of. How many?
We have three brothers and one sister.
Okay.
And my sister rode for a little while.
And then had enough.
Yeah, she had a kid, and then she quit, and become a mom.
that's a tough thing to come back from, and yeah, there's
for sure.
I think about. Carol Cedeno up in the Mid-Atlantic. She has come back a couple of times. It's not, you know, family. Look at Rosie Napravnik, who stepped away at the top of her career to have a family.
Yeah.
And it doesn't even have to be riders either, Colby, because we had this conversation. Going back, a couple of months ago? It's a demand. You know, it's hard for when it comes to stepping away and then trying to come back. Helen Pitts is who I'm thinking of. Helen stepped out and then paused at the pause of her career to have a family. So it's a lifestyle, though. And what about your other brother? Wasn't the other brother riding a little?
No, my other brother, he never rode. He's never been interested in the horse racing at all.
Interesting.
Yes.
That's funny.
Yes.
Well,
works on cars for a living.
That's all right, too. That's a different kind of horsepower.
Yes, for sure.
Colby, be well. Merry Christmas. Happy, healthy, and continued success this season.
All right. Thank you again, Steve. Thanks for having me on your show.
No, it's a pleasure. Colby Hernandez, everybody, and the Riding Hernandezes. And I'd forgotten that he that he busted out and came up to Kentucky and Indiana. And you know, as much as we watched Indiana, we did see him come over and ride some at Ellis too this summer. That's great. The Hernandezes. I guess we'll stay here, actually, Case. And we're looking for Steve Anderson to talk a little bit. I wanted to get Steve in to talk about the quarter action over the weekend, as well as everything else at Los Al. And, you know, the Los Al, I not to take away from the stake winner by any means, that Carla Gaines sent out on Saturday in the Soviet problem, that sensible cat. But the performance that, and I'm just looking for the chart, the performance to talk about was that that filly, that Moonlight Doro. And I know I've got the chart because I had saved it from, I set it aside actually from Friday when I pulled it together. Oh, for goodness sake, nothing drives me crazier than these stacks of things on the desk. You know what, maybe it's a multi-page. Did I do that? This was, the filly race that had the, Baffert, had a nice, had a very nice filly in there too, and the two with the Frosteria, and amazing. Everything else is here. Here's the Art Sherman winner. Amazing. I don't know where it is. There was. Baffert also won for Zidane with that that Britannico colt, Medina Spirit, but amazing. I don't know what I did with that chart because I wanted there was some pedigree to it as well. And you know, it wasn't like this was such a loaded weekend that you know that I would be inundated with the PPs as much as usual. There is finally, holy cow, literally at the bottom of the pile. There was also the older Baffert also had the Coolmore winner. Yesterday, as time goes by, the American Pharaoh broke through. Had been third and then second behind Himiko. This is a 3-year-old filly out of Take Charge Lady. This was, you know, certainly it was expected for her to be a nice one. So it took a third start, but as time goes by, yesterday, you might have seen fairly early in the day for Coolmore. I haven't, I should look up the fig. But then about an hour later, Moonlight Doro and Frosteria, they were a dozen lengths clear of the rest of the field. And Moonlight Doro overpowered Frosteria and went on to win and was favored. Just under even money. Frosteria just over even money. Just a tick under 6-5. But these two are obviously real nice. This was Frosteria's third start. And this is another fancy bred. This is the Hysterical Lady Frosted filly. Baffert took the blinkers off, and she ran fine. In fact, she improved, but she ran into a buzzsaw in her third start as well, Moonlight Doro. This is a Spendthrift My Racehorse thing, and was a $620,000 purchase bred by Stonehaven. And you'll recall from this summer, you remember way back to Del Mar, she disappointed at 3-5. And then ran into that Nasruddine. And she and Frosteria, you know, were both in that race. Frosteria was second in there. So look for Frosteria next time. And 87 buyer for Moonlight Doro. So another another sassy looking 2-year-old filly. It's a good. It's been a good. It's been a good fall for the fillies. And of course, this I mentioned the Carla Gaines winner in the Calbred. This was you know, that Soviet Problem is a combination sire and Calbred eligible program. And Sensible Cat was, it was 9-2. Urban Racing and Sensible Cat. You know, it's funny. This is a bluegrass cat out of a Street Sense mare, Sensible Girl. And, you know, how often when people name their horses the hybrid name, you know what I mean? Just basically taking a name from the stallion and a name from the day. And in this particular case, it would have worked out either way, because this filly could have been Bluegrass Girl or Sensible Cat. This is a very rare. This is a rare situation, because so often people do this, and you just sort of cringe. in this particular case, it really worked. I'm sure Bluegrass Girl wasn't, I doubt that that was eligible. But Sensible Cat, that's okay. a maiden winner going a mile on the grass last time at Del Mar, and it actually debuted on Labor Day weekend on the dirt, but really moved up on the grass and now returns to the dirt and wins. So, you know, kind of mixed signals from a pedigree standpoint and a previous performance standpoint for Sensible Cat. That's pretty funny. Making me laugh. Bluegrass Girl or Sensible Cat. Well done. That is not my tendency. When we go to name a horse, we have a different, it's kind of a different approach. I mean, I understand. I don't know, not casting aspersions on that style of approach. Well, we're Case is trying for Steve, and we're no good, huh? Okay, all right. So we'll all right. I'm vamping here, obviously, but it doesn't look like we're going to connect. Steve's funny. I mean, he'll be up in the barns, and you know, nothing you can do. Maybe we'll get him tomorrow, because what are we at? No, we got 15 minutes. Let me do the rest of the fairgrounds action from the weekend and go through the stakes sequence. And it started with the Lassie for the 2-year-old fillies, big time for Colby's brother, Brian. This is Dallas Stewart and the Valleen Farms people. She was second choice, paid $720 over Taylor Avenue, Brett Calhoun. And I wonder if that Taylor in Chicago. Is it Taylor Avenue? I think it is Taylor Avenue. Taylor. Big time, though, wins by 3. This is an astrology filly out of an old Forster mare bred by Tom Curtis and Wayne Simpson. Then there was an allowance, Joe Foster. The ladies sprint These were the fillies and mares going short. And Mitch Merle boots home our lost love for Joe Foster. So a Foster double between the 6th and the 7th. And this was exciting. The top two choices run 1-2 in here. Our lost love was 3-1. So Merle over Mr. Al's Gal for Jose Cameo. TriStar Racing bred and owns this half hour's 3-year-old filly, Our Lost Love. Wire to wire, but it was tough. Then came the ladies' turf, and you had kind of co-favorite Room to Finish and Offspring went off very close in price. And Room to Finish for the Catman, Wayne Catalano. This is a Giant Oak mare, 5-year-old, bred by Mike Meeks. West Point, Forge Ahead Stables, and Jerry Karum. They own Room to Finish, and Adabachisa aboard, and she wins clear, the 5-year-old, over Netta Bear, Alan Landry. In the ladies' turf, the Sprint Monty Man, also Pachisa, custom for Carlos Gelding, 7-year-old that's plenty of dances, Ron Fischow, for Ivory Sisters Racing, and Val Merle bred this 7-year-old. 6-1, actually. We got $14 here, and this was actually a really juicy return, because 3-2 favorite Birdie's Galaxy was off the board. And Birdie's Galaxy also Ron Fischow. So in this case, it was the other Fischow. And you ended up with a 23-1 shot. Silver Galaxy was third and X-Clown fourth. And as a result, you ended up, listen to these numbers. You had $45 exacta, but essentially a $400 try, $395. And 10 cents super, paid $354. So a $3,500 super for a buck with the favorite well off the board. In the juvenile, in the boys race, Marcelino Pedroza at even money for Hugh Robertson, Extreme Racing, with the Palace Colt Sir Wellington. Took over and won clear, standing perfect second for Lee Thomas. But this is a Palace Colt out of a Graham Hall mare. BCS Thoroughbreds, bred, and Extreme Racing owns 91 Assault with a repeat in the turf. This for Tom Morley, the horse that he owns with Paul Braverman, the 7-year-old, 91 Assault, the Artie Schiller gelding. Sean Bridgman aboard here. 3-2 favorite, nickel dime over, paid $520. And we told you about the classic, obviously, Grand Luigi, an El Corridor 5-year-old. He's still a horse, actually. He's not gelded, and he's out of a Gold Fever mare, Magical Mia. Interesting. I wonder how she got down there. I bet you, I've got to look her up. I bet you she was a New York bred. And Juice won that maiden special to close out the card again for Ron Fischow and Staten Fleury. This was a half hour's colt. First time starter, too. In fact, first time starters were 1-2, was almost 9-1, paid $19.80. Juice. Half hours out of a Pollard's Vision mare. So nice Louisiana Champions Day. And as I mentioned, Super Santa Saturday, which Marcus Hirsch, the least favorite when we talked to Marcus. He just like I don't like to say that thing about horses that third year in a row, Harry Rice. Thank you. I said 2 years in a row. The horse of Morley's 3 years in a row. He's won that turf race. Just like I don't like to say those horses that are coming to Preakness without having run in the Derby. just like that, just rubs me the wrong way. Marcus feels the same way about Super Santa Saturday at Fairgrounds. He always cringes whenever he says that, whenever it rolls around. A couple of things. I'm going to probably close the show with something a little sad that we talked about last week, but really didn't get a chance to. Kenny Lejeune, I didn't really get a chance to, discuss it in full. In fact, you know what? So that I don't send you home. So I don't close things out slow. I'll save the little piece of news from the museum, from the Hall of Fame, for last. Last week, we were hoping that Gary Contessa, who started a lot of his horses, a lot of the horses that he would buy at auction, Kenny Lejeune would start, and I, as I've explained, Chuck Simon introduced me to Kenny. And we got Sable Chasm started with Kenny, as well as at least two or three others, and including the recently retired Carlisle Bell. But Gary, he was at the sale, and then I think it was a lot to ask for. Would have been a little overwhelming. But Tom Ventura sent me a beautiful tribute that Kenny's wife, Carrie, wrote. And I want to read it because it's perfect. And I think people would appreciate it. I'm sure that she will. And, the thing that is so tough to take about Kenny's passing is that it seemed that he had the original cancer diagnosis and treatment, that it seemed like he had the cancer at bay, and then wasn't feeling great and was having headaches, and it had turned up and moved to the brain, and was literally gone in days after it was discovered. But I think you'll appreciate it. This is from Carrie Lejeune. The racing world just lost a fan. Ken Lejeune died at home on Friday, December 4th, after a brief illness. In his 40-plus year career, he was a jockey, trainer, bloodstock agent, and all things in between, but first and always a fan. He quietly went about his business, no advertisements, no parties, rarely a mention in the trades. That wasn't his thing. His involvement in horse racing reached far and wide. There are not too many people I can think of in the business who have not asked him to train, examine, fix, buy, sell, evaluate, or shelter a horse. He loved every minute of it. It was his life's blood. We met at Delta Downs in winter of 1980. He was hungry, trying to ride thoroughbreds until the quarter horse meet came in the spring. We lived in a tack room. We married 4 months later and still didn't own a running car. No matter, we had each other and racing. He rode a matched race the day we were wed. He rode races for several years, sometimes away from home for months, other times dragging the family along hotel to hotel. We eventually moved lock, stock, and barrel to Ocala with $65 and a tank of gas. He started breaking thoroughbreds for various farms, the first being for Fred Hooper, where he was the regular rider of Precisionist. When race riding ended, he dreamed of training and buying horses. The first horse he sold went to Jack Van Berg, a horse given to him as a thank you for getting up at 4:30 a.m. to gallop a few horses prior to his usual job. He enjoyed helping others in the business, and that's where he spent most of any profit. He partnered in the early 2000s on a few cheap horses, one which he bought as a field buddy for $1,300, became my namesake, Carrie's Gold, who fell just short of sweeping the Florida Stallion Series around 2001 or two. Bad feet. Oh, my, that horse had bad feet. He worked endlessly on those bad feet. New York trainer Gary Contessa was the first prominent trainer to see talent in Ken's horsemanship, and soon Ken was in business in a big way. In later years, we became close friends of Jim and Susan Hill and enjoyed many racing-related and personal trips together, all while talking horses, always talking horses. Over the years, he had the good fortune of finding or developing some of the best. Peace Rules, Divine Park, Genuine Devotion, Anne's Beauty, Bay to Bay, Clearly Now, Flip Cup, and just recently, Totally Boss, Guffo, Mo Forza, and many, many others. Some I'm sure I've forgotten. He was a true Cajun, and he never left his roots. He enjoyed fishing in the Gulf, a few cold beers at the end of the day, and a stop at the farm to check on the horses. He found total happiness in sitting on a pony, watching his charges march like soldiers to the track, his faithful dog Sissy always following behind, logging miles every day to keep up with him. She never wavered. Although he was ill, even he did not know in the end that it would come so soon. He lived life by the drop and consumed every last bit. It may have seemed unfair, but it was long enough. He adored and was so proud of our children, John and Piper, and I'm sure bent everyone's ear to speak of their success. They in turn adored him, and I'm proud to say inherited a strong work ethic, humble gratitude, and a commitment of service to others. To those who believed in him, I thank you. You allowed him to earn a living in a sport that he loved. For almost 40 years, tagged along for the wonderful ride. Carrie Lejeune, about husband Kenny Lejeune, a friend and colleague of countless, countless people in the game. And I'll not just wish Carrie the best for what will probably be a difficult holiday season, but also for Piper, who is facing some health issues of her own. So best wishes to the Lejeunes, kind of family that populates this industry. Piece of news just come out in the last half hour or so. And Brian Bouye sending along the announcement of a couple of inductions to the Joe Hirsch Media Roll of Honor at the Hall. And two very familiar names, one a little in the past and one still current. Peb. Pierre Belloc has been added to the Media Roll of Honor, the Joe Hirsch. And congratulations. 94 now is Peb. And, you know, of course, French born and raised. And, you know, his work started out in French publications before reaching these shores, and started in as a staffer. I'm sure when we talk to Steve Haskin on Thursday, Steve will talk about Peb. Peb started in 1955 in the Morning Telegraph, and anybody obviously of any age, anybody living that's ever bought a racing form at one time or another. I mean, I've got boxes of big day racing forms with the Peb drawings. They're the whimsical and wonderful Peb artwork. Really a fabulous inclusion into the media wing of the Hall. So congratulations to Peb. The other name came up just the other day, just last week, Bill Leggett. And I'm sort of surprised that I didn't realize that Leggett wasn't already in the Joe Hirsch wing of the Hall. I brought up Leggett last week when Dick Allen passed. And in fact, I sent that remarkable 1964 Leggett preseason you know, end of spring training article that was just amazing. The names that were involved, the other rookies like both Tony Oliva and Tony Conigliaro, and just amazing. But it focused on Dick Allen. And Leggett, for those that don't realize, was from Saratoga, born and raised in Saratoga. And, you know, I reached out to last week when Dick Allen passed, and I reached out to a couple different directions for sports writers who I kind of had hoped had maybe, you know, crossed paths somehow with Leggett, and wasn't able to make that happen. But you know, I knew that he had started at Sports Illustrated. In fact, when I had a conversation when I sent that article to Dick Girardi, and he said that he was somewhat surprised that they had given Leggett, you know, that he had written that baseball piece, you know, that first and foremost, on the turf writing circuit. And I guess Whitney Tower, Haskin can probably answer this too. I guess Whitney Tower, I guess they've overlapped, right? They must have overlapped at Sports Illustrated. Anyway, Bill Leggett added to the Joe Media, the Joe Hirsch Media wing of the Hall. And the Tower certainly in there. Boy, it's been 10 years. This will be 10 years, 10 classes. Steve Crist, Bill Knack, Red Smith, Charlie Hatton, Russ Harris, Joe Palmer, Jay Hovde, Whitney Tower, Andy Beyer, Kent Hollingsworth, George Ryle, Jenny Reese, Jim Murray, Steve Haskin, Raleigh Burroughs, Mary Jean Wall, Jim McKay, Mike Veach, Jack Whitaker, Barney Nagler, Joe Burnham, Tom Hammond, Charlize Canty, and Billy Reed, and now Peb and Bill Leggett. Pretty distinct, pretty good. Can't think of, got to think about who else. There's more. There's like every, they'll be able to come up with a couple of others. Anyway, there you go. We will come back with more tomorrow, including Todd Pletcher, Andy Serling, Steve Anderson, and more. Fun morning, and a fly. I want to thank Powell for the Hong Kong recap, Danny Gargan, Tax, Duke Matisse, John Hurd, Colby Hernandez. Good luck if you're playing today, everybody. Talk to you tomorrow.
Racing News.